own and the hundreds of others that exist in the Portland metropolitan area for whom sustainability is such a key part of what we do, it is very important that the City of Portland choose the latter and reaffirm its position as a leader. Through this, Portland and my business and the others like it can reaffirm our brand identity and align our brand identity with the brand identity in the city with which we have chosen to locate. The final point I'd want to make has to do with the O in the Oregon Sustainability Center. Yes, I am a Portland-based business. However, my vitality is entirely dependent on what's going on in the rest of the state of Oregon. I'm encouraged that it's called the Oregon Sustainability Center and not just the Portland Sustainability Center, because to me that acknowledges that the minds who have been involved in the planning to this date recognize that Portland too and this sustainability center will be dependent on and create opportunities for the entire state within which we are located. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. Last person is Mark Edlin. And how many have signed up? Great. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'd like to start off by thanking the mayor and the city council, as well as our officials at the state and higher ed, for the support over the last 15 years to get to where we are today. It's been a long journey for all of us, but I think it's one that's definitely been worth traveling. Today we're faced with a decision, you're faced with a decision, as whether to move forward boldly to continue to enhance our city and state's national, and I would say international reputation and position in sustainability, or play it safe, as other cities might choose to do, and wait to read about another city taking advantage of what we've done here and taking our leadership position. I think as a city and a state, we're currently in an enviable position of being the shining light in sustainability, urban planning, alternative transportation. In my opinion, it's due to a very unique feature we have here in Portland, Oregon, and that's collaboration. Collaboration amongst the public sector, private sector, for-profit, and not-for-profit, all moving together to move our agenda forward and achieve our objectives. And yes, there's still some unknowns that we need to finalize over the coming months. I'm confident we'll do so. But we face similar and, in fact, greater unknowns when we did our first LEED Silver building 15 years ago or our first LEED Platinum building 7 years ago. However, together we manage those risks, and I would argue that at a minimum, LEED Gold buildings are now the de facto standard, and I think we're quickly moving forward to LEED Platinum buildings being the de facto standard. However, that's not the future. That's the current. The future is really net zero buildings and living buildings, such as we have the opportunity to accomplish with this project. And there are cost premiums, similar to those when we did the first LEED and Gold Platinum buildings were delivered. However, today those premiums are at a minimum. And I think that's demonstrated by the LEED Gold rating that we're seeing in some of the affordable housing projects that are currently being delivered here in the city of Portland and elsewhere, serving some of our most needy citizens in the community. And of course, when you look at the entire life cycle cost of these buildings, I think you're looking at significant economic savings, not to mention the positive impact on the health of its occupants and the citizens of our city and state, nor even much less the economic development potential that such projects deliver to our city and our state, our local companies, and the resulting tax revenue that would be created through the profits that these companies bring to the city and the state. This leads to what I consider to be one of the two opportunities this project creates that excite me the most, and that's jobs. Jobs that pay family wages and benefits. You heard Marcy and John talking about some of their members and what they do, and I can tell you with all due respect to our engineers and architects, I can't tell you how many times I've been out in the field, and I see some of their people working with some of our engineers trying to develop models so when they put it out in the field and actually build it, they'll build it right the first time. These are jobs ranging from highly skilled laborers to welders to electricians to engineers to architects and to people in finance and project management. And I can tell you firsthand, for our company, were it not for our deep expertise in sustainability in today's economy, we probably wouldn't be here. And I believe many other Oregon companies can make the same statement as what we see as one of the shining lights in the of economic hope in our state today is an ever-increasing demand for sustainable products. But the future lies not with platinum buildings, but with net zero and living buildings, as we are in a race with other cities. The second opportunity that I think this project brings that excites me tremendously is the opportunity for our young people. And that is this project has the opportunity to deliver to Oregon Oregonians the opportunity to further deepen the collaboration between our university system and our private sector. I see that opportunity in two fashions. the first opportunities for the universities to connect upper-level and graduate students with industry, where they can come in through the OSC as interns, gain real-world and cutting-edge experience, so that when they do graduate, they hit the ground running as some of the most employable graduates in the country, who can export that expertise beyond Oregon and beyond the United States to bring jobs, revenue, and tax dollars back home to Oregon. I had the opportunity to experience this firsthand a few weeks ago when I was on a trip to Qatar with PSU and OSU and a number of other private companies. Today, we have a formal request for proposals from in front of us all for a consortium of universities and private companies to help people in Qatar, of all places, to figure out how to make their built environment more sustainable, creating real jobs and wages and taxes for us here in Oregon. The second fashion, I think, is the opportunity for industry to reach down into the various research departments at the universities and pull up not quite ready for primetime research projects, make them live within the Sustainability Center, perfect them, fix them, make them work, and then commercialize them, creating new jobs, new companies, and new opportunities here in Oregon that we can again export to outside of the state. I hope each of you share my enthusiasm and my support for this project and maintaining our leadership position here in Portland and Oregon. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much.
One person who'd like to speak. Alan?
Anybody else? Thanks for signing up. Glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
So good morning to everyone, Mayor, Commissioners. It's nice to see you all. I got to say I'm here with quite a mix of emotions. I'm excited. You know, I have crew members that laugh at me because I drive a 77 Mercedes 240D, so I can put biodiesel in it, and they laugh at me because I spend more money to put biodiesel in it than I could put regular diesel. But I'm also a little upset, and I'm kind of confused. You know, 12 testifiers, an hour, no discussion of equity, leg of sustainability, low-income people, people of color, the jobs, the opportunities for these communities that we know we can create. I know you all care a lot. I've heard you speak heartfelt about these issues. You know about the Coalition of Communities of Color report that has shown that there's a dividend to being white in the city of Portland compared to other cities and nationally. And there's a burden to being a person of color in this region compared to other cities and nationally. And one of the reasons that happens is the investments that we make up front. We're making a premium investment in this building, but are we going to make a premium investment in designing and planning this building in a way that creates opportunity for low-income people and people of color? Is it going to be like Greater Green Urban Tree Canopy campaign, where we had language in the RFP where we're sending responders to talk about green jobs? Or is it going to be 1% for green and the EcoRoof grants, where we haven't been able to get that kind of language in? Is it going to be like Greater Green EcoRoof RFP, where we had 30 of 100 points available for responders so that they could show us how they were going to build the capacity of minority and women-owned firms to participate in the EcoRoof industry in the future? Or is it going to be like the first few years of the Green Investment Fund, where we made an investment in bringing new technologies forward and subsidized and incented the growth of professional services firms that were then well-positioned for success when those practices achieved market acceptance? Is it going to be like Clean Energy Works, where we've rolled up our sleeves from the very beginning and said, equity, opportunity is a fundamental of our project. It's something we're going to measure success by, and we're going to do it all the way through. Or is it going to be like eco districts, where we're trying to do it after we started the planning? I don't know the answer to this. This is something we have to do together. If this is going to be the place where people come to see how we do sustainability in Portland, right, if we're setting the bar, what are they going to see when they come to this place? Who's going to work there? Who's going to build it? Who's going to lease the space? Who's going to see their environmental wealth built through this endeavor?
Well, as the author of Greater Green and as the author of Clean Energy Works, that's the model. Appreciate your testimony. It's assumed as part of this project because it is policies that have already been passed by the City Council. But I'm glad you've raised the issue and you've helped fill out the testimony, but you can assume it's the work that I've been associated with. Thank you, Alan. Discussion from Council?
Mayor, could we ask Lou and Susan to come back just for a couple questions?
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Susan, I just had a question based on what Congressman Wu said, because he sort of, in passing, mentioned that there may be some opportunity to get a federal tenant or project in this, which I would think not only be desirable, but could have an impact on the pro forma. Do you have any more thoughts on that, what he said?
Sure. We've already started some discussions with GSA and some of the other federal agencies. There's opportunities. All of those agencies, Interior, for example, came here this summer and did their large sustainability training for all of their employees here and hosted it at the convention center. So there were 700-800 people here who came to learn about how to do sustainability within their agency. And that's a really good example of the kind of thing that could be the cornerstone of a training center here in Portland. So one of the opportunities I see for the building is that exhibit space that we talked about, is making that a training center, not just for federal agencies, but potentially for state agencies and cities and private corporations on how to integrate sustainability within their companies, within the agency. So we're also talking to some of them about potentially being tenants, wanting to be tenants in the building. So I think there's a lot of opportunity.
On the real estate side, Commissioner Fish, we will be carrying into schematic design an alternate of being able to add a floor. So in the eventuality that we get these additional tenants, we'll be able to accommodate them, or there may be some readjustment. So that'll be a decision that we can make at the next decision point rather than one we need to make now.
Well, thank you. And my other questions for you, Lou, and the excellent PowerPoint you gave us was very clear. And on the OUS city cost share commitment chart, you walked us through the risk sharing on the nonprofit space. And yes, one of the things that I hope we can talk about at greater length between now and the next decision point is your sense about what the market will bear for nonprofits in this kind of space to sort of help us quantify the risk. I have heard from a lot of people today that that one of our tasks is how we manage risk in a project where there's also a premium as expected at the front end but long-term payoff. Well, that's a different model than we use in traditional real estate development.
Correct.
Because that, as someone said, makes this really more of an economic development play.
Correct.
Than a real estate play. But I'd be interested in knowing more about your thoughts in the course of this about what the market will bear for nonprofits so we can quantify whatever that contingent risk is.
I believe the financing plan that we should have at the end of this would certainly address that in more detail.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
You bet. Other discussion? Commissioner Fritz.
To piggyback along that and with respect to Alan's comments, because Andrea Durbin at the Oregon Environmental Council mentioned that she had been instrumental in helping to reach out to nonprofits who might be interested in participating here, I'd encourage you to reach out to the multicultural nonprofits as well. We've heard a lot of discussion in the Memorial Coliseum and in various different projects for the desire for a multicultural center and for nonprofits to participate. I'm interested in having nonprofits participate in this who aren't necessarily thought of as traditionally environmental sustainability, but as Susan mentioned, having different folks in a building adds a synergy, and that we can certainly learn from other countries, and I know that the mayor has taken the lead on that, so I just want to mention that as a something else to think about it as when we're looking at the performance as to what might work out. Can we reach out to some of our other community partners and invite them in, even though you might not think of them as the traditional green folks?
Yeah, we're using the model of the community benefits agreement for this project as well, and for the Eco District project as well. And we actually come back to council after Labor Day with an expansion of that to include suppliers as well. So excited at the initial success of the community benefits agreement and the ability to expand it into the supplier, expectations of economic and social equity into the supplier, local suppliers and manufacturers as well.
I wanted to comment on that too, that the strategies that you're allowed to use in this project, I think I know that you're very interested in seeing how far can we push the envelope on that in terms of using local suppliers in all of our contracts. And I think this is an example of how this project is helping us find benefits, kind of like Tang in the space project that we're able to then spread out to the rest of our society. And so I really appreciate everybody's work on this.
Is it Tang?
Tang.
Tang. Tang. Tang, you know, that was developed for this. For the
Velcro and Tang.
Yeah.
Commercialization of
technology. I haven't heard that word in a while.
Any other discussion? Carla, would you please call the roll?
The vote.
Saltzman?
Well, Portland's reputation as a leader in sustainability has served us well. The steps we have taken as a city and a state have allowed us to win many awards and national rankings. And while living lightly on the land was at first a testament to our ethos as Portlanders, it has reaped economic benefits as well. And we've made it a key to our economic development strategy. We listen, and then we lead. Whether our leadership in the recycling, green building, or our commitment to renewable energy sources, cities around the country have used our path as a blueprint for their future. But as many people have testified, we've fallen in the rankings, or the competition has grown more intense, and it's incumbent upon us to maintain our leadership and to bolster it, as this Oregon Sustainability Center proposal before us, I believe, will do. How we market Portland as the home of research and development for sustainability industries will be prominent in our future. Participating in the Living Building Challenge with the Oregon Sustainability Center is just the type of ambitious project that bolsters our leadership. But we cannot enter it into such an endeavor without a critical eye on the details, because failure is not an option. I do have concerns that I've expressed on some of the practical and financial aspects of this project and how we manage the risk. And I will continue to watch closely as we answer those questions between now and September, December, or January of 2011. These are critical questions. As I said, failure is not an option, and we must make sure that we answer all the tough questions and make sure that we ask ourselves all the tough questions. That said, I'm encouraged by the new language that's been proposed in the substitute resolution, as well as the private sector partnerships that this project has established and prepared to take to the next steps. So I want to thank Mayor Adams for leading this effort, as well as the leadership of the Oregon University system. I also want to thank Portland State University President Vim Bivel, and Lindsay DeRoche for that matter too, and Jay Kitten. I mean, these are people who are really sort of in the Hall of Fame on the leadership of making this reality, and certainly Jim Francisconi has certainly been very well involved in this from the start. So I look forward to reviewing the details as we move forward, and I'm pleased to vote cast an optimistic aye.
Leonard?
It's important to remember why Portland is on the cutting edge of sustainable building, alternative forms of transportation, and the kinds of things that I think some people think we do just because it's cool. We don't do it because it's cool. We do it because we have to set an example of how the world's population can exist with the least impact possible on our ecosystem. And what has happened over the last century is we have developed as a culture, not just in this country, but in the world, as a people that consume resources without thinking about the impact that consumption has on our environment. Petroleum use, by any credible account, is increasing the world's temperature, increasing the temperature of the oceans. Plankton that we depend on to exist in the ocean to provide oxygen is dying at record rates. The world temperature is eking up, causing the polar ice caps to melt, raising the seas and impacting hurricanes, impacting temperatures in ways that could be fatal to the future of the planet. We build this building not because it's cool, but because we have no choice. We have to build buildings like this. And to the extent that we have critics who say it's too expensive, I say we can't afford not to. We can't afford not to set an example of how, as a planet, we can exist in cooperation with our environment so that what we pass on to our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren is a world that we inherited, and we're not doing a good job of that up until now. This is an example of how we change that. And we can't just do it because it's a cool place to look at. We have to do it because we set an example and try and urge and plead other cities, states, countries to adopt similar kinds of ethics in how we manage this planet. So I am exceedingly pleased that Mayor Adams has taken the lead on this and has focused on this because that's what it requires. It requires mayoral leadership, and it requires being willing to take criticisms, knowing that the better good is served by doing what we do here today. Aye.
Fritz.
So the hour is late, so I'll be brief. Thank you all for all of your work on this. And with the amendments worked out by Commissioner Fish and Mayor Adams, I'm pleased to support the resolution. Aye.
Fish.
Mayor Adams, thanks. Thank you for bringing the new resolution forward and for your the work with all your colleagues to get to this day. And I'd be remiss. You have many people in your team who do good work, but on this one, I just want to acknowledge Kimberly Schneider, who is a frequent visitor to our office on the second floor. We appreciate her work. I am fully supportive in concept of the Oregon Sustainability Center, and I fully support moving forward to the next phase of design. I also support having the council clearly state our intention to partner with the Oregon University system to proceed with schematic design and lay the foundation for future commitments for joint ownership and tenancy of this building. I'm not required to say this, but since my wife teaches at Portland State, I will acknowledge that she is theoretically going to benefit from this, although I don't believe there's any plan to move the history department into this building. So I think it's fair to say. The schematic design and the analysis that will be done following the adoption of this resolution will allow us to sharpen our pencils, look closely at the numbers, and make a fully informed decision. And I appreciate the mayor's commitment to that process between now and when we make a final decision on whether to move forward with this first-of-its-kind project. As has been stated by our presenters, there's additional information that we will need before we can make the final commitment. But I'm confident that we will get that information and be able to make an informed judgment. This is an exciting opportunity. And as I've learned in the course of looking into this at a greater level, paying a premium to develop an innovative project like this is potentially warranted because of the significant returns on the back end, both to our community and to brand Portland and sustainability. As I mentioned in my comment to Lou, this is not just a real estate deal. There are ways, we have to find a way to finance this, but I think it would be misleading to present this to the public as a real estate deal. This is an economic development play with a real estate component and some complex financing. And I am very supportive of the philosophy and the concept. And I'm confident the council will discharge its duty to sharpen the pencil and make sure that the numbers all add up. This resolution lays out clear expectations for additional due diligence, information, and analysis that will be needed before we can make a final commitment on future development, construction, ownership, tenancy, and the operations. And I look forward to working with all of our partners, including BPS, PDC, OMF, and other cities and offices and bureaus to do that process. But I remain hopeful that the Oregon Sustainability Center, as it is to be redesigned, will prove to be a cost-effective and signature project for the city of Portland and our great Oregon University system. So again, Mayor, thank you for your leadership on this and your team, Susan, and your team, and all the partners. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank members of my mayor's office team, Lisa Libby and Kimberly Schneider, for your work on this over the past couple of years. I want to thank Lisa at PDC as well, Colin Sears, I think I mentioned, but I'll mention again, Rob Bennett, Portland Sustainability Institute, the folks at OMF who've been part of this. This allows us to really get to work. This was the early feasibility of whether the Living Building Challenge was possible to do to respond to the Living Building Challenge in a way that is meaningful for urbanized situations, cities. And we have figured out that it is feasible. But now we've got to move into the due diligence of, you know, we've got initial feasibility, yes. Now how do we actually engineer this thing? And not only engineer it in terms of time and space and the environment, but engineer it in terms of maximizing the social equity, maximizing the economic equity. And it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity we've given ourselves. So thank you all very much. Aye. So approved. Can you please read item 1121?
Do you want to do the consent agenda?
Sorry. Can anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? All right. Please call the vote on the consent agenda.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. I'd like to acknowledge we have a very special guest that has just entered the chambers. Vancouver, Washington Mayor Tim Leavitt has joined us. Welcome, Mayor Leavitt. Glad you're here. Anything you want to say to the council?
Always a pleasure to be in Portland.
Very good. We are the Vancouver-Portland Metropolitan Area. Now, can you please read the title for item 1121?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with TriMet to provide transit police services.
Thank you, Commander, for waiting.
Oh, you bet.
Appreciate your patience.
We're here to answer any questions that council might have with this issue, if there are any.
Could you just tell us why this was pulled and why is it back on the agenda? What are the differences?
There aren't any differences related to when it was pulled and to this point. Again, this is an opportunity. I think Commissioner Salzman had a couple of questions. It's the reason why it was initially pulled, and we addressed those issues.
The mayor was also sick, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Well, I guess I have a question since you're up here. I intend to support this agreement, but I do want to raise an issue that I think was of concern to me and something I hope we'll use as a metric of measuring the success of this agreement with TriMet, and that is the commitment to CEPTED, or what does CEPTED stand for again? Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that our officers have continually flagged certain light rail stops in particular where modest capital investments by TriMet could dramatically improve the safety or perceived safety of light rail stops. There's the light rail stops in particular. It's not isolated to that. So this is something we need to measure as we renew this agreement with TriMet. I would hope this will become a metric of how we measure the success of this agreement.
Right, and I'm fully committed to CEPTED. I mean, part of my job as a commander of the Transit Police Division is to make sure that if I see issues or problems that can be fixed through environmental design, it's my job to bring those up. 82nd Avenue is a good example. We've done a lot of good work there, and we've got the crosswalk there fixed up. We widened it, made the fence there to avoid jaywalking and stuff like that, additional lighting. So I'm fully committed to that because the better we design these places, the less police officers we have to be out there because it'll basically police itself. So I'm fully committed to that.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking less for the equipment from you than I am from TriMet.
Right? Oh, okay.
I just want to flag that because the capital to do some of the great things you're talking about comes from the TriMet side of the budget.
Right. So I'll keep pushing.
I have no doubt about your commitment, Commander Chris.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I think Commissioner Saltzman raises an important point, and if I could get regular if it's a quarterly, if that's meaningful, regular reports for repeated sort of on the transit, whether bus, aerial tram, streetcar, light rail, where we have repeated calls for service, so that I meet with TriMet every month, and I think your idea is that I can do a better job of reviewing, being an advocate on your behalf,
okay,
and reviewing the CEPTED issues with TriMet and just keep it at the top of the list when I meet with them on a regular basis. I'd be happy to do that. Thank
okay.
you. All right. Carla, can you please call the roll on
testimony?
Oh, that's right. Sorry. We're
patient people here.
The three of you come on up. Are there more?
I just had two people sign up.
Okay. Two people come on up. Glad you're here. Thank you for waiting. Appreciate your patience. Mr. Handelman.
Oh, sure. Good afternoon. Mayor and Commissioners. I was prepared to say good morning. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. And the issue of this agreement between the city and TriMet came up previous to the James Chassis settlement. It came up at the James Chassis settlement. It came up at the James Chassis report. And this has been going on for 5 years, this agreement between the city and TriMet, and there's still no fixed to the accountability issue that was raised, and that has cost the city money and will continue to cost the city money until you fix it. Not only has the Citizen Review Committee and OIR warned you about it, but now you've paid $1.6 million out to the Chassis family in part because of the way the Transit Division calls in people from all these different agencies and has the Portland Police Bureau only nominally in charge of them. The officers from these other agencies report to a Portland Police Bureau commander, but when a question of accountability is raised, they don't work for the Portland Police Bureau. The language of the agreement since 2008 explicitly says that the officers will follow their own agency's policies, and that that PPB's protocols are also to be followed, but if our city's protocols are in conflict, their department's policies are the default. So in other words, an officer from another agency where perhaps a taser is allowed to be used on somebody when all they're doing is saying, no, I won't comply with your commands, has the ability to do that in the boundaries of our city, even though we've told our officers, you can't do that here. And we have people patrolling the city using completely different kinds of standards than we've spent many years trying to get our Portland police to follow. And I understand that TriMet goes out to Hillsborough and it goes out to other counties, but that doesn't mean we should accept this kind of policing going on in our city and no way to hold them directly accountable when they harm our citizens. And as you know, and even if it's a Portland officer committing the infraction, we can't always get an officer from another city to come in and testify to the Internal Affairs Division about what happened. It's bad enough we have security guards running around downtown Portland who are armed and that there's no accountability system that's been set up by the City Council, but I certainly think that by signing this agreement, you're giving away a lot of possibility for us to hold these officers to the same standard. And I said last week, and I'll say it again, that it would be really great if we could go back to the day when TriMet had its own police agency, but it's going to have to be accountable somehow to elected officials, and there's going to have to be some kind of accountability system that has civilian oversight. Until then, we're going to keep getting lawsuits from the people who get beanbagged, thrown down to the train platform, and otherwise roughed up for a $2 fare.
There's no question we have work to do in this area, and I'm committed to doing that. In the meantime, I need a contract. So this is on the list for improvements in a variety of levels. It's already been on the agenda for my discussion with the new general manager at TriMet. The solutions might, and you sort of allude to them in your comments, I mean, the solutions, some of the solutions to me seem very straightforward, but they aren't necessarily as easy to implement as you and I might like. But I'm going to pursue it and would hope to have a report back to council no later than the first week in October. I wish it was sooner, but that just is testimony to the complexity of the situation. But that's no excuse. We do need to make some improvements.
Mayor, can I just also acknowledge in the agreement that it is initially a one-year agreement, and by its terms can be terminated by any party within 30 days' notice, which also means it can be modified by any party at any
Correct.
Time. So at such time as there's something you want to bring forward, this can, in fact, be modified.
Right.
Thank you.
You bet. Sir.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, excuse me, I'm going to repeat some of what Dan has to say. It's always a pleasure to be before you. I'm Michael Bigham, chair of the Citizen Review Committee. I'd like to talk to you briefly about the TriMet intergovernmental agreements covering transit policing. As you may remember from my testimony during the reception of the OIR chassis reports, these agreements do not require that officers from other agencies be available to the Portland Internal Affairs Division during an investigation of a complaint, shooting, or death in custody. Nor would Portland officers need to be available to another agency if the incident happened there. This omission stalled the James Chassis investigation for over a year. After CRC testimony on TriMet IGAs in 2008, the mayor set up a work group of local law enforcement agencies to look at the accountability of officers from the various jurisdictions in the transit division. I'd like to thank you for that. The work group did establish some safeguards for accountability, but our work is unfinished. And one thing we could not agree upon was making involved officers from other jurisdictions available for interviews in administrative investigations. Those in attendance were very frank when I broached the subject. Making that a requirement was beyond their authority. It is something that will have to be done at the city or commission level, along with input from the House Council. I hope that we will work towards a solution to this problem. If not, the bottleneck that stalled the chassis investigation remains. There's one agency that's gotten a pass throughout this whole affair, and that's TriMet. Some 20 years ago, they dissolved their very capable police department, leaving the enforcement duties and consequences to the local agency. To achieve a solution to accountability issues, they need to step up and become an involved partner in ensuring the safety and security in transit policing of their facilities. In closing, I'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and attention to this matter.
Thank you both. Yeah. Thank you both very much. Anyone else wish to testify? All right, Carla, can you please call the vote on the emergency ordinance, item 1121.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Michael Bigham and Dan Handelman for their testimony. I know that the transit division has taken a turn for the better, that they've worked out some of their training issues, and that Chief Reese will keep a close eye on the operation of this unit. But having said that, I would in the future like to see the Bureau develop further training specific to the transit team, including those agencies and jurisdictions outside of the city of Portland, to ensure that expectations are the same for all officers who work inside the city limits of Portland. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for the testimony and for the work on this. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for committing to addressing the issues raised. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 1121-1?
Amend contract with Brown and Caldwell for additional work and compensation for the Fano Basin Pump Station Project, number E08294.
This contract will just simply amend the Brown and Caldwell contract on the Fano Pump Station and increase the scope of the compensation by $725,000. The funds are available in the sewer operating fund. Urge approval.
So why is it an emergency and on the four-fifths?
Would you like to explain that? I don't know myself.
Sure, I'm Dan Hebert. I'm the BES project manager for all of the Fano-related projects. And the reason this is presented as emergency ordinance is that moving ahead with this project, we're expending a considerable amount of money in the order of $300,000 to Clean Water Services to take our sewage and convey it and treat it while the Fano pump station is out of service due to problems with the force mains and problems in trying to develop and expand the Fano pump station by about 45% additional capacity to meet the needs in a five-year storm that we currently can't do with the existing pump station capacity.
But we've been working on this for a long time, and I'm wondering why is this particular contract extension unexpected, and why was it so unexpected that it had to be on the four-fifths?
Well, the biggest reason that we've had an unexpected development here is that we had applied for a land use approval with Washington County to develop the pump station site, and in June 14th, we were notified that the hearings officer denied our application for that land use policy. So now we've had that hurdle, and we have to adjust as rapidly as we can to redesign our project and try to look at alternatives to design something that will be permittable and will have a land use approval by Washington County to actually build the project.
And why the four-fifths?
I'm sorry?
Why wasn't it just put on the agenda? Part of the reason that I think these contracts need to be on the, that they are on the agenda is so that the public knows that they're coming up, that if anybody has any concerns about it, they see it on the agenda, they can come in and testify. Most of the time they don't. So I'm just wondering why this isn't on the regular agenda for next week rather than coming in as a four-fifths item that was added. Thank you, Amy.
Hi, Amy True from Dan Saltzman's office. It was originally supposed to be on the regular agenda. It was just a staff oversight. I apologize for that.
That happens. That's an answer, too. I just wanted to find out. Thank you very much.
All right, unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, would you please call the vote on 1121-1?
Saltzman?
Well, thank you for your explanations.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. We're recessed till 3:30.
Thank you very much.